Hello again, podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief from Medical Education, and I'm talking today with a five-week-old cold, and so I'm going to do my best to get through this, but I hope you'll understand if my voice goes strange or cuts out a few times. I have a chance today to speak with somebody who is coming through loud and clear and doesn't seem to have the same issue, Francois Sillier, who is the deputy director at the Center for Teaching and Learning at Stellenbosch University, and who has a paper coming out in the November issue of Medical Education entitled Modeling the Pre-Assessment Learning Effects of Assessment Evidence in the Validity Chain. Welcome to the podcast, Francois.
Thanks very much, and hello, everyone.
You're down in South Africa, and on this paper at least, collaborating with Lambert Schuerth, who's in Australia, and Kees van der Vleuten, who's in the Netherlands, and so this is very clearly an international collaboration. I wonder if you could tell our listeners a little bit about just what are pre-assessment learning effects?
Essentially, what we were looking at was the relationship between assessment and learning. And as we started digging into what exactly that relationship was, we started discovering that it hasn't been very clearly defined in the literature previously. And in 2007, Philippe Dauchet and his collaborators started using, as far as we can see, that was where it originated, the terms pre-assessment learning effects, post-assessment learning effects, and pure assessment learning effects. So pre-assessment learning effects are typically the effects on learning that accrue from an assessment that lies in the future. So the exam that I'm writing next Friday, how does that influence my learning today? Post-assessment effects would typically be, for example, you get feedback on an assignment and how does that influence your learning for a future assignment? And then pure assessment learning effects are quite interesting. They take place while the assessment is happening. So, for example, in the process of creating a portfolio, one could possibly also include the testing effect as an example of that.
Mm-hmm. And was there a reason you chose to focus on the pre-assessment side, or does that just happen to be the particular focus of the study?
When we started the series of studies, the methodology that we used was grounded theory, which led to the proposal of a model explaining the relationship between assessment and learning. And the setting in which we did the study was focused very strongly on summative assessment, and the other types of assessment didn't actually feature in that. So the model that we derived was then very strongly focused on the pre-assessment learning effects of assessment and very much in a summative exam-driven assessment setting. So that was the reason that the model focuses on that. What's interesting is to speculate on whether the model in fact holds water in other settings, but that's research that's yet to be done. So the model itself focuses on these pre-assessment learning effects.
Okay. And that model formed the basis for this study, and in many ways this study was intended to be a bit of an effort at validation of that model. So I clearly need to ask you as my next question to tell the listeners a little bit more about what the model was that you were trying to assess.
Essentially, what we found when we were looking at the relationship between assessment and learning, in its simplest form, as the diagram in the paper illustrates, there are assessment factors that lead to various learning effects, and they are mediated by mechanism factors. Now, some of the assessment factors and the learning effects have been described previously in the literature. What's quite novel in the model is the mechanism factors that are linking the two. And essentially, there are a series of assessment factors linked with a series of learning effects. All of those relationships are mediated by a set of 10 mechanism factors.
Can you give us some examples of each of those factors and effects?
Well, for example, let's take a simple one of multiple choice questions, where the exam that's coming up is going to comprise multiple choice questions. So that would be the assessment factor. The learning effect would be that students would adopt a particular approach to cognitive processing, so the quality of their learning, really. But that is influenced by mechanism factors. So some students would perceive the question simply to require memorization, and because the impact that they're looking at is that they may pass or fail the exam, their goal is to simply pass the exam, and so they memorize to pass the exam. another student will be striving to get 75%, a good pass, and they might perceive the same questions to require a good understanding of the work. And so being driven by response value, in other words, the value of the response for them is getting a good mark that's going to get them a good pass, they would then respond to that same assessment situation by trying to learn for understanding, as opposed to the memorizing response of another student. So the one thing which the research has revealed is that the response of students is not uniform. Two students in the same situation will respond differently, and any given student, so my response to assessment could be different to assessment in one subject as opposed to assessment in another subject. And that might be driven by my interest in the subject. It may be driven by my motivation. So it's quite a complex relationship, but I think what we find exciting is the fact that the model gives us an approach to actually describing and exploring this relationship. Because a lot of the research up to this point, I think, has focused quite strongly on if we use assessment method A as opposed to assessment method B, then does that give us more surface or deep learning?
Right.
And a lot of the research exploring assessment and learning has looked at those relationships. And the model gives us, I think, an expanded view on a range of factors. One of the assessment factors which has come out in the model, which hasn't really been described before, and I must emphasize, a lot of these things sound like quite common sense, but one doesn't actually find them in the literature. Mm. But one of the factors is imminence. So how close is the assessment? And what was fascinating in the original research was to see how a student who scores very well in the course of their entire medical school career, how they will describe learning for understanding, learning with the goal of helping patients when the assessment is still quite distant time-wise. But when it's the week before the assessment, changing their strategy completely and switching over to memorizing, for example,
right,
because that's what they perceive is going to give them the marks that they want. So response appraisal leads them to actually switch their mode of learning, start memorizing, because that they know is what's going to get them the marks in the exam.
Right.
And so imminence causes them to switch their mode of learning completely. Again, linking through a factor, for example, response appraisal, that this is going to get me the marks that I want.
So it's very clear anytime we start talking about a model with many variables and with individual differences and with temporal shifts that, like you're describing, that it is very complex and creates a difficult challenge of trying to validate such an elaborate model, which I suspect is part of the reason that people tend to be reductionistic and focus down on one or two things. How does one go about validating something with so many interacting variables?
I mean, this is one of the major challenges that we're dealing with at this phase of the research. So we're quite early in the process of validation at the moment. And I have to admit, when I set out on this path, I thought there was going to be a fairly simple way of validating, for example, using some of the quantitative methods that one can use in model validation. But here we are dealing with potentially 400 different relationships between assessment factors, learning effects mediated by mechanism factors. So the sheer number of relationships makes it incredibly difficult to validate.
Right.
Now, for anybody who's interested in validation, I think the one paper that we refer to by Prochaska, Wright, and Velliser gives a good oversight, I think, of the process of validating a model or a theory from scratch. And they almost have a 12-step process by which one can judge at what stage a theory is. We found that a very useful framework to think about how strong a particular theory or model is. Now, this is still quite early stages in those 12 steps, but what we've essentially tried to do, not being able to focus on the entire 400 relationships at one go, we've chosen to actually look at the least frequent relationships. So the original data set was about 750-odd pages of interview data, and there were a number of these relationships that across the whole set of interviews only featured five times or less, so very infrequently,
right,
relative to other elements. And what we chose to do was to say, well, if we focus on a subset of factors, or relationships rather, let's look at these least frequent relationships and see whether we can find evidence that they hold in different populations of students. And so this first step really was taking the model back to a similar population of students as that in which the model was derived, and actually taking this uncommon set of relationships and putting it to the test in a broader population. And essentially what we've been able to show is that of the 20 relationships that we explored, the majority of these very uncommon relationships were found to hold in this broader population of students. So that we find quite exciting, and it supports, I think, our approach here, which is that the fact that the majority of these uncommon relationships have been shown to hold in this population, and in fact a subsequent study has shown that it holds in students at different medical schools too, gives us, I think, a very strong basis to move forward with the process of validation and now look to the stronger relationships.
Just to make sure I understood that, so what you're saying is that you deliberately sought things that were not very prevalent in the original data set, yet you're still seeing that there are strong associations, and so these components, even the less prevalent ones, seem to belong in the model.
That's correct. Yeah. Okay. That's correct. So the majority of these less common relationships do seem to be significant in the lives of students.
Okay, and then, so what do you mean by there being an association? How did you actually set up the study to allow you to demonstrate that these relationships exist?
What we did was we actually had to create items for this purpose. So the challenge was exactly the fact that there are multiple relationships, they're varying time-wise, and that different mechanism factors can play a role at different times. So what we've done is we've created items for the study based on the original qualitative data, so data drawn from the lived experiences of students. What we did was create scenarios, and each scenario was then varied. So, for example, I mentioned just now the example of imminence, where a student is studying 6 weeks away from an exam as opposed to the same student studying a week away from the exam. Right. And what we did then was we created a scenario where the student was studying distant from the exam, and then we created a second scenario in which all other factors were held the same, but the imminence factor was varied, so now the student was a week away from the exam. And we asked them to indicate what their learning response would be and which of the 10 mechanism factors best explained the relationship. So already we are simplifying the model in service of research by getting them to only select one of the mechanism factors, because what we saw in the qualitative research was that often there would be two or three factors playing a role in any given situation. But for the purposes of the study, we wanted to see, could we illustrate a predictable relationship between the assessment factors and learning effects, and then could we demonstrate the mechanism factors were playing a role? And for the majority of factors, we were in fact able to show that where we varied the assessment factor, there was a predictable change in the learning response.
Right. So this is, as you said, a complicated enough model that for us to do it justice in live time in a couple of minutes would be challenging. So perhaps I'll direct our listeners to the paper itself so they can read more about how these variables are fitting together and the specific associations that you identified. But just as a way of wrapping up and giving them a sense as to why they might like to do that, can you tell us something about how this has changed your practice or what you think the implications of the testing that you've done to this point to be?
I think one of the key things that it's changed for me is that it has really reinforced, not this one particular paper, but the series of papers up to this point, it's really reinforced to me the profound effect that examinations have on student learning behavior. And it stretches beyond just a simple relationship with, for example, the quality of learning. There's a whole range of factors that are influenced, both the quality of learning and the regulation of learning, when students learn, what they learn, how much they learn. And it really reaffirms to me that we need to include the design of assessment, and specifically summative assessment, as part of the design of any teaching situation. Because if we don't include it as an integral part of that, I do believe that there could very easily be a mismatch. And again, this is not a new idea, but I think what this research is showing is that there is a multifaceted relationship between assessment factors and the learning effects. It seems to be a very powerful relationship. And the question is, well, which of these relationships are the key ones to focus on? There may well be some that are stronger than others, and that remains to be determined with future research. So I think the key lesson for me at this point is that assessment needs to be an integral part of the design of any teaching setup.
That's great advice, and I know you're in the middle of preparing for a very large conference, so I should let you get back to work, but I do hope that throughout that you're finding time to continue this line of research and still finding it productive.
Yes, many avenues have been opened, and I think there are many areas to explore, both the relationships and the role of these mechanism factors that are newly described. And understanding the role of these, I think, is really going to put us in a strong position, probably a few years down the line, but put us in a strong position to predictably use assessment to guide student learning.
Right. Well, congratulations on some very interesting work, and that's definitely a laudable goal, so I will look forward to seeing how it continues to evolve. Just as a reminder to the listeners, I've been speaking with François Cillier, who's at Stellenbosch University, and we've been discussing a paper that he has coming out in the November issue of Medical Education entitled Modeling the Pre-Assessment Learning Effects of Assessment, Evidence in the Validity Chain. Thanks, François, very much for taking the time to talk with me. I'll, as I said, look forward to seeing what comes next.
Thanks very much.